say, give out my heartfelt thanks to all of you out there for having tuned into the first hour today, and an equal thanks to Ying Li for her wonderful launch, and also to Joel, Lori, and Ron for their readings this year at the festival, and also to that whole group of people that none of you you don't even realize they're there, but there are these people that come out and listen and sit in the audience and support the festival each year. So, and also launches at Novel Idea. So my heartfelt thanks goes to them as well. And with that, it's about 3/4 of a minute after 5 o'clock. Let's just start this out as if it were a new hour, and I was just opening up because there might be some of you just tuning in. And I will say that it is now 5:01, and I want to thank you for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. And in case you just tuned in, my name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up in this second hour, again from the 2025 Poets at Art Fest Festival, in that same group, in that same session that Ron was in, if you were tuned in to the first hour, you just heard his reading. I'm just going to continue now with that session, and you're going to hear readings by Meg Freer, Calista Markotich, and also Jane McDonald. So I'll tell you what, without further ado, I will just go ahead and jump back in there. I think I've said everything I needed to say. So here we go. Again, the first, I introduce every one of them, but I will tell you the first poet coming up is Meg Freer. So here we go. Up next. Meg Freer grew up in Montana and lives in Kingston, Ontario, where she enjoys interdisciplinary projects, being active outdoors, and discovering unexpected meaning in the beauty and strangeness of humans and the natural world. Her prose, poetry, and photos have appeared in many journals and 4 chapbooks. She is a contributing editor for Traces Journal, poetry co-editor for the Sunlight Press, and belongs to the Ontario Poetry Society and the League of Canadian Poets. She co-hosts Quirks of Human Nature, a monthly series featuring poetry performed simultaneously with live improvised music. You can find her work in her free Substack newsletter called Finding the Colors. Let's bring up Meg Freer.
Thank you, Bruce, and it's always a really fun time to be here at Art Fest, especially when it's not raining. Thanks to Bruce for making this poetry tent possible. It's really nice. I'll start with 3 poems with a local Kingston setting. Along the River, Autumn. Sunrise lights up a seagull like a flare as it flies past a homemade raft. Migrating ducks bob and float like rubber duckies in a funfair tub. Wing beats of swans, the sound of hushed voices close to a microphone. A beaver chugs upriver like a motorboat, its wake a giant golden V in the morning sun. The raft, a familiar sight on the river for over a year, a floating house with walls, roof, porch, smokestack, built and paddled by a man who once lived in the tent encampment but wanted to keep his belongings safe. Now a wreck of wood planks and plastic barrels. Where did the man go? Tall white birch trunks lean into a crown of maple leaves, neon as nasturtiums. Autumn yellowed poplar leaves flutter in the breeze, wink in the sunlight like spangles. unhoused people, more of them lately, live in tents here, an area of woods and marsh. Private property, no trespassing, abandoned for now by the developer. A pickup truck parks alongside the fence, an unusual occurrence on this dead-end lane leading to the Riverside Trail. The driver places a box in bushes where the fence has been pushed up to create an opening. Non-perishable food in easy-to-open containers. A good Samaritan. The sun sidles across my face. Half a dozen turkey vultures, not often seen in this area, circle and circle a mackerel sky. Half a point lost. "Wait, stop," says the kid, as he picks up something from the sidewalk. Typical kid. Walks are never straightforward. 1 point for curiosity. "No, put it back. It's a bottle cap," says the dad. "But dad, it ruins the earth." Another point for the kid. 0 for dad. "Okay, take it," says the mom. "We'll put it in that garbage can in the park." Predictable. Mom, the peacemaker, the argument stopper. But kids love bottle caps, special rocks, coins, shells. One of my boys still has his old collection of bottle caps, still likes to sort and count them, wonder about the mysterious ones. Half a point for mom, for preventing an argument between herself and dad, and for not ruining the earth in her son's eyes. That half point lost for not encouraging observation and imagination. Blue Day, in memory of Blue and Kim. I shared a few tears today with two grown men. First, for a beloved dog who had a good long life with a long goodbye. And next, for a beloved wife, gone suddenly, too young, with no chance for goodbye. For the lost souls left behind, tears will never be enough. For the departed, it will always be springtime. Grass, sleek green after rain, dandelions galore, lilacs starting to bud, rainbows and sunflowers to lighten their days and ours, and relight our grief-toppled inner candles. That's the local set. And I guess the next set of three poems, you could call them people poems, about specific people, perhaps. This first one is actually based on real experiences from family members. Evening, when the dogs howl. Some poor sod howls in the emergency room hallway, filled with other chaps on gurneys, and he can't help but yell for help in all the clatter and chaos. And the dogs in the doctor's heads howl because there are no beds to put all these people. And another poor soul howls as she arrives, only to have her body expire while she waits. And a frail, elderly woman howls in pain and dismay at the noise and bright lights, until a nurse finally squeezes her and the poor old sod from the hallway into a closet, converted into a room meant for one. And she listens to the man howl and calls to the staff, "He must be 100 years old, and he's very sick. Give him a bed first." And the animal shelter dogs howl for their humans who won't be coming back. And the ambulance sirens howl as they bring more suffering, those living on the streets and in tents, into the ER hallways. And the nurses and doctors howl, then collapse at the end of their shifts, wondering how their hospital got that way. This is also a true story. Fully alive. She practices speaking at 40 beats per minute. one word per click of the metronome, to let her brain rest after the concussion. A seemingly unimaginable task, except for her decades of musical training. The discipline of this new exercise, a trellis, that captures disappointments and desolations, the grief and trauma of all she's lost, the buzz of nerve action when she closes her eyes. She's fully prepared to believe the construction sign near a newly built house that reads, "Danger due to dragons," the last word added by a child's hand. No one in the neighborhood wants to take the sign down. This is the last of my people poems. It's in celebration of Sharon Wood, who was the first Canadian woman to summit Mount Everest. She did it when she was 28 years old with a team of people. And another man, Dwayne Congdon, was at the summit with her. Out of their whole team of 13, they were the only two who made it up there. It has a little bit of a rhythm to it because I wrote it to be adapted as song lyrics for a piece for children's choir that a local composer, Martha Hill Duncan, wrote. And it's going to be adapted further as a piece for women's choir that will probably be performed here next year. And I was actually in touch with Sharon Wood, which was pretty fun. She lives in Alberta. She's still a climber. And she's pretty excited that her...
When did she climb? When was the date of that?
1986. Yeah, so she... Yeah, she was pretty excited to have her climb turned into a story that turned into a song. And she wrote a book about the experience. It took her 30 years after her experience. It took her that long to process it to write a book called Rising. Believe and begin. The creation of the Himalayas seems a wonder, a miracle. Mount Everest seems far as the moon. I've been thinking, dreaming about this mountain of mountains. We can do more than we know, but Everest will run this show. Just begin. Believe and begin. I punch through a snowdrift to look out of the tent. Plumes of spindrift surround us. The wind pushes and shoves. Every breath, every word burns. We can only see our feet and the rope. For balance, one hand against the slope. I head up the glacier with toe-ins, cross steps, and back steps, my fancy footwork dance. Everest folds me into its shadow. The mountain above glows gold. The light is different, soft yet bright, after yet another storm and sleepless night. Snow blows off the summit ridge. I skate down the rock, focus on the next step. Won't think about falling, must keep going, can't give up. Our bodies, minds, and spirits wane, but I find my balance again. Just begin. Believe and begin. Sleeping bag, hammer and axe, tent parts, pots, stove and food, oxygen bottles, water melted from snow. I swing my pack up onto my back, stumble under its weight, slide oxygen mask over mouth and nose. I can barely move forward, can't feel my toes. To get through this last day, we need all the luck we can get. Be patient, be calm. Hard days bring out the best in us. Didn't expect to get this far. I thought death was near. It sure is beautiful up here. So lonely at the top of the world, lit by the last slice of sunlight. No one survives long in this cold, at this altitude in the dark. Get out of this death zone and end this climb. But I wish we had more time. If your dream seems too far away, then you rise, you climb. Keep surprising yourself. Dreaming is most of the fun. Love what you do. Hold your own in the strife. A mountain can change a life. And I'll just finish with a poem each of my two chapbooks that are back there on the table. This is called Still Life Waiting, Notes on a Ghost Town. It's based on stories of the residents of an old mining town in Montana called Garnet. And it's got some old photos in it that I took and some new photos that I took as well. Log Cabin Jail. Kill someone's dog while drunk, and you'll be locked up. One small window and a log ceiling and floor make escape impossible. A jail, not necessary until saloons were built. That sounds like something you would write. And the last poem I'll read is from Big Questions, Tiny Moments. I was the poet in residence for the McDonald Institute, the Astroparticle Physics Institute up at Queen's University in the physics department this past year. And this is the result of hanging around with a bunch of astrophysicists for a year. I'll just read one poem from this book. It's called Deep Decay. Deep decay. Deep seabed, deep search, deep shipwreck, deep loss. Roman wreckage at rest in sand, a record of high-risk sea travel, deep in the past. On the ship, lead bricks, dense and pure, their radioactivity nearly gone after 2,000 years, 100 half-lives. Ancient lead, blanketed by the sea, melted down to be of service to the search for dark matter particles. It becomes a modern shield around a luminous copper sphere filled with noble gas. Electrons inside drift toward a sensor as if on sea currents. History calls to science from the deep sea. Archaeology walks the bridge between them. Deep questions as the hunt for dark matter begins. Thank you.
Up next, Calista Markotich, former teacher, principal, and superintendent of education, lives gratefully in Kingston on the shore of Lake Ontario, a traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Haudenosaunee nations. Her poems appear in numerous literary magazines from Vancouver to St. John's, Newfoundland, and in several American and British journals. Her poetry has twice received first and second awards in a Canadian contest, has been selected for Canadian Poets Poem in Your Pocket campaign, and honorably mentioned and short or long listed, most recently as a finalist in the Gerald Lampert Memorial Award for her collection, Wrap in a Big White Towel, came out in Frontenac House 2024. She is a contributing editor for Arc Poetry. Let's bring up Calista.
Hi. Thanks for coming. It's really great for a poet to have somebody to read poetry to. And it is the month of June. It was Father's Day in June. My own father has not been on this earth for a very long time, but my first two poems are sort of in homage to him. Safe, safe you turn. The arrowhead that is my car crawls a screen of digital nothingness. The GPS can't see the grassed-in road, its shoulders shawled in trees. The cool voice woman says, when possible, make a safe U-turn. She's too urbane to notice the buttercup pop driveway of the paint-worn farmhouse where lilacs, lanky limbs, boost heavy-lidded blossoms up to nod in at the window. I bet it's the parlor with a sideboard and Sunday china. She's too highfalutin for the clothesline, where fresh breezes billow the cheeks of sheets and flap white pillow slips. I can feel the fragrant dampness against my face, the cool voiced woman still insisting on a safe U-turn. Hey, those smaller squares, are those hankies? They are. They were. the starched white fold in the breast of a good wool suit, the soft crumple in a work pants pocket, pulled to mop a brow. The breeze flurries them this way and that, flags of surrender to the foray in my heart. If I had made a safe U-turn, I wouldn't remember Dad, the pirate, four corners of his handkerchief knotted to make a funny pouch cap. Yo-ho-ho, his fingers tying, knots making hours. And a bottle of rum, his basso profundo, Jol and me giggling, his loyal little band. The cool voice woman is patient. Make a safe U-turn, she says again, impassive. She doesn't know that now I don't know anywhere else I want to go. In another version for my dad. I think he could relate to this one, maybe even better. Banker's daughter. Dad, you left me among your valuables this drop leaf desk with pigeonholes that manage our flighty fiscal life till month's end when I dutifully draw up a chair, drop the leaf, and pay our bills. Straight up, we have a skylight shining down on every webby trestle and tunnel our monies take to be quit of us and off to bigger coffers. All up and down transactions fraught with the usual pleasure and regret at reckoning time. Through the skylight, look, a bird flits by. I strive in that free wing beat to name it Chickadee or Jay. Alive, you'd know, Dad, wouldn't you, by the flick of its wings. And above that, an airliner, its contrails etching an exquisite line in blue. Aboard, imagine, minute beings, small conversations, minuscule dinners served, microscopic towelettes. And above that, endless cerulean, sheath of beauty, shield of sanctuary, sky. And Dad, your watchful eye on us, a tad askance at our car payment, amazed at our frequent debits at certain cafes and restaurantes. And then I thought, since I was on that roll, I have two poems about my husband, who's not my dad, but my kids would say he's a mighty good dad, so the next two are for him. Weaponry. Into the dove-colored sky they drop, the bombs. The dogma of gravity plunges them into history. I have seen the deadly sepia ovals falling many times. This footage is, says Dawn, new. Provocation rises like debris from blasted earth, like damage. Sutures pop along the archetypal scar, seaming us together, love's cross stitch. For now he's high on warplane stories, the arcane info, gull-winged fighters, diminutive B-25s, aircraft, takeoff, Spitfire, Hurricane, etc. He's keen for planes of war, their names, properties, trademark screams. His inner aeronaut leans forward, elbows on knees. To me, this is a declaration. Even if, earlier this evening, he tossed the salad, helped me with the dishes. He sees my countenance, says, "It's drones now, hon. It's surgical strikes." How his tongue relishes the pristine elegance of such words. Their sibilant hiss cauterizing an implement, excising precisely to the margins of danger. So simple, so unlike the complex, up-close, embodied weapons I could deploy with the turn of a shoulder, with a closed heart. And another one that maybe shows him in a little less warlike stance. But he is interested in war, so this one is titled Holiday in France, German Military Cemetery Above an Invasion Beach. I remember the grasses sprang with crickets along the rows, softened by decades and coastal rains to emerald alleys with gravestones shaped like lozenges. And the bright Atlantic glittered her sapphires below us. And you perform some small subtractions with the numbers on the stones. And I followed you into the simple math. 16, 15, 17. These were boys. Boys. Bikes dropped curbside. School books jumbled into tottering stacks. Pitchforks standing in the hay. And little brothers jumping up and down outside the windows of the train. Mother's hankies fluttering long goodbyes. How long did it take to thread a through line from tight throats and welling eyes into mortal dark disclosures in the red, wet maw of war's beast? How long to pull the curtains closed across eyes of boys, across the bluest sky of Normandy? I remember the pergola with the visitor's log, where people could write things down, how my fingers twisted the chain of the pen, and you, schooled from youth to keep the tumult of the heart within that sturdy pump, said, "Cal, you don't have to write anything if there's nothing you can say." Below us, the Atlantic shrugged her shining shoulders, the beautiful, helpless sea. And then this one, I'm reading it because for two reasons, really. One is that Writer's Fest is going to be coming back. I'm sure you've heard that. You probably heard that it wasn't coming back, but my understanding is that they had what they consider to be angel donors, both literally and figuratively, and so they're coming back. And this poem found its genesis at a session in Writer's Fest a few years ago. My editor, who really insisted that the audience should know what's going on in a poem, and said that if the poem doesn't do it, you tell it in the title. He liked this title. Michael Crummy promotes his books, The Innocents, at the Kingston Writers' Fest. So the title will tell you. We were in Salon A, a raft of well-brunched literati, hoping he'd throw us a line. The angst slapped around the room, dark spindrifts rocking us, his novel with the shifting deadweight of taboo. Incest. All the salt in the Newfoundland Sea can't scour or season this. We were afraid we'd slip undone, and the orphan children, wash apart. We caught the line he threw. Hand over hand, he hauled us into the tale that had cast its anchor in him. Innocence, the innocence. How he pled their case. How he hauled our raft ashore with all the orphan's cargo. Hunger, toil, cold, cod, seal. A clutch of their dead parents' sketchy truisms. I read the book as if to make safe harbor of myself. Three chapters in, I lay the innocents face down on the white tiles, run a bath hot, as if to bomb the children, gray with grime, their hands and faces dark from ocean's whip and weather's burn. I wrap in a big white towel, clear a fist, shaped oval on the steamy glass. Through mist, I see my mirrored self. The children wrestle their resources in the pages I turn. Courage, humor, a few small mercies, love, like tidal confusions, like the sea. Dangerous, generous, lone hope of survival. Page by page, I lift my cargo, a flick of understanding, heartload of compassion, the heft of ink on paper, in which two orphans scrape a harsh, heavy life, the weight of them pressing me deep into a big, soft chair. But that's also the title of my book. It is an amazing novel by Michael Crummy. Really amazing. Yeah, no, it's... It's harsh. Yeah. I think people read it, they almost feel they're saving the orphans by keeping on reading, you know? Yeah, they're alive as long as you're reading.
I let them die.
Oh, no. That's... maybe you should write a poem about that.
No.
And I'll finish with one that one of my daughters, who actually just showed up a little while ago, said I should always read at every reading. And kind of I have, because I'm at the age where I pretty much obey my daughters. It's called Narcissus of the Avians. It's actually about my mother. So I started with my father and with my mother. Narcissus of the Avians. A frenzied robin flaps and flails in excrement he's dropping on the sill. I can't put this robin in a poem for my mother. Alive, my mother flinched at words like shit. Yet it would flout the truth to leave unnamed what cakes the walkout windowsill, the glass, a wingtip-struck montage of dust and chaff and ordure smears. Alive, my mum loved robins, how they hop on twiggy legs, their pert head tilt towards the turf, their quick extraction of a worm, their nesting husbandry. But this one unsheathes talons now. Thus, so does that one in the glass. Cockfighters, they are equal, this one and that, mirrored in the window, matching rage, matching peck to vicious peck. This mate forsakes his family for the robin in the glass. Cannot break the spell. Huffed, affronted, neither does he sweetly kiss the image that exposes him, bellicose, unworthy bird of spring. I want to write a robin poem, remembering my mother, remembering her call, her voice, every March, that special day in early March, her lovely, optimistic voice. I have seen a robin, dear. Mom, this is not that robin.
Another hand. Up next, Jane McDonald lives and writes in Prince Edward County, a recipient of the Janice Colbert Poetry Award and shortlisted for the Marina Nemat Award. Jane currently has a manuscript under consideration comprising of poems and a place marked by disappearance and loss. Let's bring up Jane.
Bruce, as ever, thank you. Community builder, thank you. All right, so I'm a little bit terrified because... these poems are like, whoa, they're pretty pretty fresh. So, yeah, you're not really... it's like making a new dish when for the first time when guests comes. Like, don't do that. But I do that, so here I am. So this is a selection from a cycle of poems. The cycle comprises a fairy tale of an orphan girl who becomes a woman. The selection I'll read today begins with two poems in which the storyteller stands before her audience and invokes her muse. And then I'll follow with a selection of poems when the orphan is a girl, and then finish with the orphan as a woman. Start here. These songs rush inside my skin like blood. Her mouth ring-shaped before she howls. I can't locate her. To find any language and ride it. A pocket of air, forceful purse, a push through dense water to surface. What did happen? Where did the Titans stand to look at the carnage? Their father, universe murdered, orphaned by their mother, she brewed their Titan bodies and her, fed their antagony, bits of meat. The wind does howl around the earth, three times by day, seven by night. Mother, carry me on your back. In my eyes, your hair like cinders. Flashbangs, your rage in my ears. Your ribcage, your candescent skin, burn me. Unconjugate my joints. Immerse my teeth. Show me my mimic. To start over, return where fire's warm and gentle talk consolidates. Oh, time, find me. Ask me to speak when you do. And now follows a selection of poems in which the storyteller tells the orphan's tale in various voices. And so in the first five poems, the orphan is a girl. The family. We're all packed. You heard us. Cartons, packing tape. We threw things away. We kept what we needed, a few small things besides. We spelled the names of the rooms on the boxes, numbered stickers to identify. Like boulders, we stacked them behind us. Nothing will break. Because we went slow for you, we went slower than we needed to. We didn't want to wait this to take this long. There's a house in the east, bought and we paid. You can too, by choice, or we could make you come along. We could put you in a box. We have a small crate, black nails, a silver hammer. Because after all, you will not grow up. Because you chose not to leave the last room in the house. We aren't leaving without you. The child. She packs some of her belongings to cover her tracks, not leaving out a doll the family knows about. She shouldn't have shown them, but she did. This is the first item to go in. A semaphore she has invented, this ruse, this buying time with packing, look like cooperation, look like agreeing. And her favorite books, they know nothing about. Some with the handmade checkout cards, scissored envelopes, the due dates. The dolls, the knitted bears, they signed them out. She did the signature, propped up the books on the floor in front of them as if they could read through their feet. She turned the pages, moving from book to book. They read in unison in her bedroom upstairs, the one she got after. The magpie. Felt like it was time to check the child's growth. Did all the talking. Was mildly surprised by her. Not patient, but not unfriendly. No, thank you, from the magpie, when she let him in through the window. He needed to catch her up. She had not looked about herself since well before the longer days. Like a dandelion ignores what happens at night. She'd missed everything important. He told her, pay attention, is what his visit amounted to. Nightmare. Now that it is empty and the thick night visits someone else. Now that the feathers that floated without any light and the crackling dust like the TV before the shows come on are dead like dust is dead, crumbled with other dirt, mixed and recirculated. Now that the fumes that spilled under the door, her voice calling, though no one did call back. Now all of it has fallen to the bottom under the street, the beneath of all the sidewalks where the gravel rains and the rusting cement. Someone could have seen it, the calling and the smoke and the decomposed feathers. A dead person would have, or someone who at last falls to sleep beside the road for lack of anywhere else to stay. A person like that can hear and will forget. A witness, the kind who will tell nothing of somebody else's problem another time. Safety spells. Today, she fears the fear whose boggy seat she will describe no further. One plus one minus one, and the lake will roar in the wind, blood tap on the ribs. Tea spills into the saucer, pour the few drops back. The scratch at the door is the cat, stand to let her in. Because there is light, there are eyes. Because of the table's sharp edge, skin covers bones and nerves thread the dermis. To listen, invite ears and the several sounds, the salt and sweet. Invite the shadow that trails the pen's tip. Invite channels, interlocutors, the cone of light, larger tracks of the future. Today is the age of the mouse, how sensitive her ears. And these last three poems are The Girl Becomes a Woman. November. Though they are leaving and are not coming back, they leave the dar ajar in the ravening. Their grins at their good jokes linger, and watching them go, she cries, "Oh, how I love them!" Wondering who speaks, grief or love, as when a miser clamps the coin between her teeth, drops the gold into her poke. Sonnet. I could have reveled in you, as an anemone does delight in her sun-warmed arms. Was my life a flower's? Yours, a walk curtailed from farm to home, favored sun, fated not to savor your plantings. Now I am grown past blossom, provisional spring. The course I run, dried and filled, and the stones, earth's teeth, where once were titans. Harvest me, not planted, always running to find you. And this is the last poem. Thank you very much for listening. Greenwood. Today a feast at the house he began and she finished. More windows, a flue for the stove that burns wood, the grains she sowed and scraped earth. Time lives like a prince, hunter who knew these woods and learned the ones before. Beloved gone by, the walk, soft grass, stream bank. Sing, hello, goodbye, sweet prince. Time lasts forever inside the barley. How small, how quiet to make time stay. Today, she gathers pipes and strings. She plays the green piano. Strong voice and stricken, water note. She knows black days, sings green, come by. Sings blood, sweet prince, his sweet face. While the guests at the feast remember him, believing he's gone, they smile and eat cakes and recall beside the house he began and she finished. Goodbye, guests. Thank you for coming. She's looking for quiet. Goodbye, safe home. She's looking for him. The after transformed. The sun's light, autumn lawn. The silence after song a feast might deliver. Thank you.
Give Jane another hand. That was a wonderful round. How about for all five poets, another round as well? And you just heard from the 2025's Poets at Art Fest Outdoor 4-day poetry festival this year. You heard readings in this hour from it by Meg Freer, Calista Markotich, and Markotich, and Jane McDonald. And before that, in the first hour from this festival, you also heard readings by Lori Voss and Joel Giroux together, and then also from this session, I just carried it into the second hour, a reading by Ron Chase. And then to start everything off, going way back to just after the top of the hour, 4 o'clock, book launch by Ying Li with Sergei Mei-Tiang reading as the second voice in that story called Mrs. Nobody. It's a children's illustrated children's book. Before I move into a few things I want to share with you before the end of the show, including today a song as well. And I'll introduce that. It's a CD I kind of fell in love with in 2004 when I discovered it. It was put out in 1999. I didn't know about it then, but I seem to want to come back to it from time to time. So I'll introduce that too before we get out of here this afternoon. I do want to thank all of you out there for tuning in to both this the first hour and then the second hour of the show today. Equal thanks again to all the poets who participated this year and for the six who were on the show today, and also again to YS Lee and Novel Idea Bookstore for that wonderful launch event. It is 47 minutes after 5 o'clock, and I probably should do this one more time, and then I'll be right back.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca.
Guys, gals, non-binary pals, different circles is moving. same day, different time slot. We're now on Fridays at 9 p.m. Join me from 9 to 10 p.m. for an adventure through sound. Who knows? You might just find your next favorite song.
And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Again, we are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And just a quick reminder, well, I should say we do stream online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And also, though, just a quick reminder that I upload both hours of my show each week to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Everything that airs will remain there for 3 years. And we'll kind of give you a heads up. 2 weeks in a row now, I think, I've played readings from, or at least, I think it's 2 weeks in a row. But at least I know I've done two sessions altogether from Poets at Art Fest. And that will pretty much dominate this show for the next several weeks. There were 65 poets altogether whose work is going to air. And you do the math, I guess, somewhere between, I think I did, I had 6 poets today and maybe 8 poets in the other reading. So somewhere in there, you can do the math and figure out how many weeks it's going to air. And also, I will still be airing book launches and also the monthly open mic that I organize and host. And that is what I will be airing here next week. Just to give you a heads up, it will be the July readings from that monthly and the Journey Continues open mic reading that we hold at the Elm Cafe. So I do hope you can tune in for that next week. I do hope as well, I will mention that's happening at the Elm Cafe again at, I think it's Montreal and Charles Street. Doors open at 6:30 and the event runs from 7 o'clock to 9:15. There are readings in the round. And, it's coming up. I should give you the date, too. It's coming up. It's the first Tuesday of the month, so it's August 5th. There's also August 5th, another first Tuesday of the month open mic reading held in Madoc at... and it's called First Tuesday Muse, and they do have a Facebook page as well, so you can get all the information there. I'm trying to think if it says at Finn's Pub and Patio, 231 Durham Street South in Madoc. I think there's runs from 7 to 9 p.m. And so, yeah, got a couple of options depending on where you live. I will mention that I hope you can stay tuned for 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music coming up, hosted by Rob Carnell, coming up right at the top of the hour to take us there. Again, I mentioned it's an album that I just keep coming back to from time to time. So you're going to hear Every Day from a group called Yola Tango. And hope you have a great week. I'll catch you here next week.